It's the movie that satirized everything about the Southern United States, who didn't notice and just loved it anyway because it's about NASCAR. It's Talladega Nights, The Ballad of Ricky Bobby, and it was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America. The number one movie in America. The number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
It is the number one movie in America. My name's Sean Collier, and I'm here with an elite international mercenary army of movie lovers. I like that, as Robin pointed out, Invasion USA showed up on Amazon Prime
right?
for free
I'm
the
so
moment
upset.
We posted.
I'm so upset. Or am I excited? Does this mean we're going to get an Amazon sponsorship?
Someone's listening. That was
they're like, we are pushing four of these DVDs
in one weekend.
The people have spoken.
It's an incredible spike. Interest in Invasion USA has spiked 400%. Clearly, that was first Camila Adams.
Yep, that's me.
And second, Robin Hitchcock.
Hi.
We have talked enough about Chuck Norris for this and all lifetimes.
Until next week's is going to be a Chuck Norris
right.
movie.
Right. He's got two others on there.
But what a transition in that this film has characters named Walker and Texas Ranger.
Exactly.
What a nice little nod.
I almost feel like all of these movies have kind of like connected to each other, like one after the other in some way, shape, or form. I haven't done the math yet. I haven't done the science.
The math was Tony Goldwyn's for several episodes.
Right.
No, let's go back. This is only six. We can work all the way through this. Sharky's Machine went into Divergent via Tony Goldwyn?
No.
Sharky's Machine went into... How would Sharky's Machine...
You're right. I was wrong.
...go into Divergent?
There's not even anybody with a fancy mustache in Divergent. So, I mean, you can't even...
Well, Sharky's Machine wasn't part of the random draw, though. So it
okay.
would start after
okay.
that.
Okay.
Divergent into Kiss the Girls...
Tony Goldwyn and Ashley Judd.
Kiss the Girls into Elysium...
Which... By the way, it wasn't the original one. It was supposed to be. The one we got was...
Last Samurai.
Which had Tony Goldwyn. So that was the connection. And then if you can connect either Last Samurai or Elysium to Invasion USA, I'll count it.
Roundhouse kicks.
And then the characters Walker and Texas Ranger, sons of Ricky Bobby in Talladega Nights. Yeah, I was excited for this one. Because I do like it. I'm looking around the room, and I don't know if I am going to share that opinion.
Let's have the 60-second recap.
Who's
got time?
I do.
Robin will okay. time. Camila Adams is this week's contestant.
Yes, and I was not prepared.
I was not prepared. This was a late substitution.
Yes.
So, if it's like 64, 65, I'll still give it to you.
It'll probably be 10.
Okay.
All right. So, Talladega Nights is the ballad of Ricky Bobby, a young man who was always obsessed with going fast. He wants to go fast, and so he ends up being a NASCAR driver. And he gets all sorts of crazy man success and just this ridiculous hick-type wealth. And then comes the downfall. He's surrounded by people who love him and respect him, but he manages to miss the one guy who was really there for him his whole life, his bestie, John C. Reilly. And then something terrible happens. There's a downfall. He gets fired. There's a nemesis of Sacha Baron Cohen. And then, you know, he finds true love, and then he finds his real self and comes back on top.
40 seconds.
I feel like your recap was, it's a movie.
I mean, if you examine this movie from the perspective of the plot, there's not a lot of there.
Sure. For some reason, I want to read before I go into the fun facts, the look at the numbers here. Am I the only one who is a fan?
Listen, if I watched this movie in 2006, I think I would have loved it then.
Uh-huh.
But it is 2019, and I am 35, or I'm sorry, I'm 34. I keep saying I'm 35. I'm not quite there yet.
You're preparing for it?
I'm like a month out, and I'm a little too old for this shit.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Just a lot of things that made me roll my eyes, and it made me feel bad about that. Like, I felt like such a killjoy watching this movie.
Well, you weren't the only one. I remember, I thought that I had seen this movie before, but I was wrong. I remember I had seen the dinner table scene, and that was it. And I was like, and
is
that's
that
enough.
Baby Jesus part?
Yes. Okay. And I was like, and I'm done. And I shut it off.
So, 'cause that, to a lot of people, is like the highlight of the film.
Yeah. So we'll get to that. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, there were moments that I did enjoy.
Oh, I laughed out loud several times.
There
like,
were a
this
couple.
Is not bad.
Yeah.
I'm happy that I watched it, but it's certainly not something I would say if somebody's like, I've never seen Talladega Nights. I'd be like, you got to see it.
Right.
I'd be like, yeah, it's okay.
You're fine.
Okay. I'll say, well, look, I did see it at the time.
Yeah.
I liked it a lot at the time. I think it's the best of the big Will Ferrell movies.
I'm going to have to disagree.
What do you think is the best?
Of the comedies or just Will Ferrell in general?
Of the typical Will Ferrell comedies. So not a little
indie
movie.
I think Anchorman.
Which I still haven't
seen. That's my favorite one. But like my favorite Will Ferrell performance is Stranger Than Fiction.
Sure, sure. I think if we get into his indie fun times,
right,
that's a different category. And he's really good at that.
All right.
I like this more, and we'll go to the normal stuff in a minute. I think I like this more because I like comedies where everyone is operating in the same reality.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the big point of comparison was Mary Beth, my girlfriend Mary Beth loves Step Brothers.
Yeah. Mm.
Which is the John C. Reilly, Will Ferrell movie after this one.
Okay.
And I had never seen that. So I sat down and watched that last night and I was like, this is funny. I like it. I enjoy it. It's bothering me that some of these characters are in on the bit and some of them aren't.
Oh, that makes sense.
Right. Okay, I can see.
That like Richard Jenkins is like, they're 40. What the hell? Why are they acting like
right.
this?
Right.
And Mary Steenburgen is treating it like they're 12. Like,
Academy Award winner Mary Steenburgen.
Correct.
You say her full name.
That is her full name. It's what's on her birth certificate.
And so in Talladega Nights, I really like that. It is heightened. It is absurd. But everyone kind of yes ands.
Well, this movie
accurately.
Is an improv game.
Right.
Like this, yeah. It's an improv scene. Like, and most of it is improvised, is my understanding. Mm-hmm. Like a ton of the dialogue is improvised.
Yeah.
That's how these guys made their movies back then. But this thing that you're describing of everybody acts like the absurd is normal, that's improv. That's
right.
What makes a good improv scene. Mm-hmm. So as an improviser, maybe I should like this more than I do.
Mm.
But maybe part of the reason that I was like, okay, is because I spend so much of my time in that
sure.
realm of comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And so for people who don't, it can be so refreshing and exciting. And if they had ever seen an improv show then, or sorry, if they had never seen an improv show and then saw this movie, they could be like, what? They're just saying things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're just building off of each other's ideas. This is so exciting to me, right?
Yeah.
And that sounds so condescending, and I don't mean it to, but it's the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess the other thing I like, and the reason I like it better than Anchorman, is I like when the satire is a little bit more plausible. Like Ron Burgundy could not exist in the world, but Ricky Bobby could. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Like maybe Sacha Baron Cohen's character couldn't exist in the world.
No.
But like Ricky Bobby pretty much could exist in Alabama.
Oh, totally.
So wait, can we talk about, why don't you do your bit?
Okay,
yeah.
Let's
we'll
do. This is, it's time for This Went to Number One, where I read the things about the thing. I'm committing to the name, but not where I explain what happened. Talladega Nights, The Ballad of Ricky Bobby, released at August 4th, 2006, the 24th number one of that year. It won the weekend with $47 million. Easily, number two was a debuting cartoon I don't remember called Barnyard, the Original Party Animals.
Wow.
$15.8 million. Further down the chart, that was also the debut weekend for The Descent, a horror movie.
Ooh, I really like that.
That's
movie.
A really, really good movie.
So good.
That was fifth, $8.9 million. Yeah, underrated.
Is it about Supreme Court justices?
It is not. No.
That's my guess.
But there is a cave.
The Descent.
The Descent. Yes. They descend.
Oh, that movie is amazing.
Right?
I thought you
were
said
picturing
The Descent. Like,
okay.
I descent.
Oh, gotcha.
Are those homonyms or is that a regional accent thing?
I think a little bit of both.
Descent.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a good horror movie. You should,
I've seen that.
See.
I love that movie. That's probably my favorite horror
movie.
Even
the second one.
I've never seen the second one.
That's your favorite horror movie? I mean, it's really good. It would be in my like.
To be fair, I don't watch a ton of horror movies.
Yeah.
But the things that I look for in a horror movie, all female cast, a lot of vaginal imagery.
So much in that particular film. By the way, I think this is the change to our procedure I want to talk about this episode. Here's all I'm saying. I think for the episode October 15th, we should keep shuffling until it lands on a horror movie.
Oh, I think that's a great idea.
And I would be willing to add in December 15th, keep shuffling until it lands on plausibly a Christmas movie.
Okay.
There's fewer Christmas movies, so like we'd have to stretch it.
But. I think it might be smarter if one of us takes the time and goes through the list and grabs the horror movies, and then we randomly choose one of those.
Yeah.
I was just going to make all of us sit here while I press the button and then, 45 times, and you edit that all out.
I'm trying to avoid the thing where we finally get Jurassic Park, and then we can't talk about it.
Right, yeah. Yes, I will happily do that.
Okay.
Talladega Nights did repeat at number one the following weekend, which was really rare in the 2000s. Everything was one and done, so that's significant. Another 22.1 million, fending off the debuting Step Up was number two.
Ooh.
In Talladega Nights' second weekend.
What time of year was this?
What did I say? August?
August.
Yeah.
I ask because I don't have any memory of this year.
Yeah.
Or of the movies that came out that year. And so this is a total mystery to me. Yeah.
Number three, the second weekend.
I love dance movies.
Well, yeah.
Me too.
I love Step Up. I was late to one of my first dates with my husband because I was watching Step Up.
That's how he knew.
You arrive and say, I'm sorry, not everyone had stepped up yet. So, third that weekend, behind Talladega Nights second weekend and Step Up, was the debuting World Trade Center.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ouch.
I might have gotten a little teary-eyed at the end of that.
I can't watch that movie.
Only because that's its entire reason for being.
Right.
Is to squeeze a tear out of
exactly.
you.
Exactly.
When Nicolas Cage says, you can't
direct that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then it's not full of jet fuel, can't melt steam.
No, it's
melt steel.
Melt steel beams.
Yeah.
You just cut out the middle six letters.
It is.
I'm
tired, guys.
It is straight down the middle.
Okay.
The reason I thought that was okay.
What happened to Oliver Stone?
I think what was going on, I mean, we're talking about 2006. We're talking about 5 years later, which was also the year that United 93 came out. And I feel that
the worst Dante's Peak volcano duo ever.
I think that Paul Greengrass and Oliver Stone kind of thought to themselves, and this might be giving them too much credit, but kind of thought to themselves, let's do these stories straight down the middle before someone does them wacky.
Mm.
Let's get out in front of someone having a hot take and just play these straight.
That doesn't sound like Oliver Stone to me, is what's making me react that way.
And yet, that's what happened.
Okay.
Anyway.
That sounds exactly like Paul Greengrass. That's why Hollywood calls Paul Greengrass.
Right.
Oliver Stone was Natural Born Killers, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
But also JFK was what is making me think this.
Right,
and even,
right.
Like, even Platoon, like going back, you know, and Born on the 4th of July, like he, and W, period, like his whole oeuvre is about, you know. Sticking it to the man and being a nut job.
It's mostly about Nicolas Cage and Michael Pena lying in rubble and being sad. I think somebody had to do it, and so they did it, and we got there. Talladega Nights barely missed a third weekend at number one. It did fall to number two by $50,000 behind the debuting Snakes on a Plane. That was the third weekend. Snakes on a Plane to number one.
So that actually puts this crystallizes to me where this happened, because that was the week I was driving across the United States to move to Seattle.
How long did you live in Seattle?
Less than a year.
Okay.
I didn't live in Seattle. I lived in the Seattle greater metropolitan region.
I only know that from I know the places around there from listening to podcasts because everyone is always filming, like taping in Olympia or what's the real hipster one? I mean, there's probably five.
I don't know. I lived in Sammamish, which is not that.
I've never even heard of Sammamish.
Talladega Nights in the top 10 for 6 weeks. Domestic total of $148.2 million. The 12th highest grossing film of 2006.
Wow.
The fifth best box office performance of Will Ferrell's career. The third best if you push the voice roles aside. For Will Ferrell, it goes Lego Movie at number one. Elf is obviously number two. Sadly followed by Daddy's Home at number three. Megamind is four, and Talladega Nights is fifth. For an impression on which of his iconic movies made the most impression at the box office, Talladega Nights made $30 million more than Blades of Glory, nearly $50 million more than Step Brothers, more than $60 million more than Anchorman, and about double what Old School made.
So this is really, intro is explaining this, is that the South went to see this, the or South NASCAR went fans went to see this because they love NASCAR?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I also feel like...
I want to push back on this whole, the South. I think that NASCAR fans describes a wider geographic region.
Yeah, I don't know how to say that other than the South anymore. Because it's really everywhere outside of a... It's every, like, well-paved place outside of a small, a major
Red State
city.
America?
Yeah, it could be Red State.
Isn't
America.
The Speedway in Indianapolis?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's not really the South. I mean, it feels like... It feels like Cranberry Township, to use a local reference, as much as it feels like Birmingham. I'm trying to see if I have anything else here I must absolutely say. Oh, this is the most successful film in the history of Academy Award winner Adam McKay's career. This is his biggest film.
Mm-hmm. And that's another thing that I think maybe made me like this movie less, is we talked about Vice a lot on this podcast for some reason or another.
Yeah.
But a lot of people criticized Vice because Vice has this air of, you idiots weren't paying attention during the Bush era.
Right.
And then people, now I see how incredibly correctly, pushed back with, you made Talladega Nights during the Bush era.
That's true.
He clearly, and there's that incredibly weird moment where the poor man Steven Weber is talking to the Halliburton exec. And he's like, Halliburton, I want to buy some of that stock. Mm. Cut to a new scene. Mm-hmm. What?
Yeah.
What?
I don't get where that was going. Even I ended up with the extended cut. And even in the extended cut, that doesn't go anywhere.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think that was fully fleshed out. No. Okay. The point. So that's about it for what I had to say. My read on this movie, and I think this is why I like it, was that... This is a really effective satire of a certain, as you said, Red State America, which is not confined to the Red States,
right.
Which is, you know, anywhere with McMansions that isn't in the vicinity of a major city. I think this kind of needles that culture pretty well in a way that they all went and saw it anyway.
I feel it's kind of condescending and gross in a way. Like, did you see Logan Lucky?
Yeah.
That was another movie where I was like, you're just making fun of these people for being different than you.
Hmm.
I have no problem with mocking these people, though. Maybe that makes me a jerk, but there's such ripe room for parody there. And, like, okay, so parody. I don't know.
I think that maybe the reason that it didn't successfully come across as parody and people went to see it as a celebration of their culture is that it doesn't exaggerate anything. I mean, it does, obviously. But so much of it is just like, these people like this sport because cars crash in it. And I'm like, yes, accurate.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they didn't explore that idea. The only moment is when they cut to commercial during the car crash. That made me laugh out loud.
Yeah.
But, like... It felt like they didn't meaningfully examine this culture. They just presented it for mockery.
Well, it's you know, the joke of, like, the quick repeated bit in the bar where Jean Girard asks them what's great about America and everything they name is not American.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and then even the crepes bit a minute later, it's just... I think that there is something worth pointing out about the notion that, like, kind of this whole patriotic rah-rah American pride thing is fundamentally without any substance. Like,
yeah, right.
Like, okay. That there's no there. And this is a movie that continually points out you're really enthusiastic about something you can't even define.
Right.
Okay.
I think that's kind of where I stood on it. I've never been like the most, you know, patriotic America. Yay.
Mm-hmm.
So this, like, seeing this all and that bit in the bar specifically, it was like, yeah, you know, I guess I was there. Just there was just a lot of moments. I'm just like, yeah.
But wait, I want to push back on that too, though. And I have been a patriotic rah-rah person back in the day when I was young and foolish. Pizza, as we know it, actually an American invention. The Chinese food that they're talking about, actually an invention of Chinese immigrants, right? Americans. Okay. So yes, America is great. Those things are American.
Yeah. I just kind of think of them more as like bastard versions of.
I think they're great.
I do enjoy the American Chinese food as well as American pizza.
Right.
And I don't know what is the difference between American pizza and like Italian.
Oh, Italian pizza. It's more like what you get when you go to a fancy restaurant and they serve you pizza.
Like a thinner crust.
Uh-huh. Okay. And right.
A little more crispy.
Yeah. I've never been to Italy. That's just my understanding.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
That's my understanding. That's what I've heard from people who have been to Italy.
How do you read like the Sacha Baron Cohen character?
Oh, I love it. He's by far my favorite part of the movie.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm not sure what to make of him. Because like you pointed out that he cannot exist. He would not exist in this world. I'm like, he's supposed to be French.
Yeah.
And this accent.
Yeah, it's like, kind of all over the place.
So, I was kind of expecting that towards the end for him to reveal, like, oh, I'm not French. You know, I've just been doing this, like, fakey accent whole thing the whole time. But
I believe in my heart that Sacha Baron Cohen can do a great French accent.
I'm sure.
I don't remember him in Les Mis. I assume that he does a better job there.
Yeah, I think it was fine.
I've completely erased that movie from my memory. but I think that he was doing such a bad accent because it's funny.
Yeah. And I totally understand. I figured it was on purpose as it was an actor's choice.
Right.
There were moments that I did find, you know, a little bit chucklesome and just like the fact, I don't know if I found it funny or if I was like troubled by it, was like that once he introduced the fact that, oh yeah, this is my husband.
Yes.
And then like the reaction to the whole, like the bar's reaction and everybody in there, you know, this like this, and I was like,
that was a very 2006 moment.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a few others, like when they're holding hands and he's like, this is a sign of friendship in Europe. Disregard that I have an erection. It's like, this is such juvenile humor. And then also the pit crew, there's a moment where they're like, it's a hard habit to break. And what's his face from 30 Rock is like, yeah, like stalking your ex-girlfriend. And I'm like, this joke didn't age. I don't like this.
So there were like two moments that actually made me laugh out loud, like scared the dogs loud. was Jack Brayer when he's in the bar.
There you go.
Yeah, he's in the bar and he's like, he needs to get a gift for his 83-year-old grandmother. And the dude's just like, get her a coffin. And there's just this awkward silence there. And he's just like, so matter of fact. And then in the hospital, when Michael Clark Duncan, when Ricky Bobby is like, I hope you guys have sons, and they get their legs taken away from them, and he's just like, don't you put that evil on me, Ricky Bobby.
I have that same one. I have the same one written down, and that's what I mean, where like I half expected that to fizzle at that point, like, Ricky, we're telling you. And instead, he yes-handed it.
Right.
He's like, no.
Yes, he upped
it. You will not curse me.
Because he's been like totally mild-mannered and mellow throughout this whole movie. And then to see him just like jump to 10 like that, that was great. And then the rest of that scene too, the whole like stabbing in the leg. And
yeah.
That was awesome. that is so improvised. And in a wonderful, like, you know, that's why improv is wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that there's also something that I say, and I said back at the time when I wasn't an improviser, is I'm like, when you see improv live as live theater, you can be a little bit more indulgent about it. When you do improv for film or television, it's like, well, you guys film this
like
and edit it.
18 different takes.
Right, exactly. So if this is what ends up making the cut, like you can't just be like, it's improv.
Right. Which, it's like, it took some time to get there.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
That was the interesting, because having seen it before, that's why I was like, I'll get the unrated and extended and see what's in there. And a lot of it was just not extended. They just used a different line.
Gotcha.
Like there was just a lot of alternate lines. And I was, and they were all about there. And like I went into some of the bonus features and saw that like, yeah, that's what they were doing. They would just 20 takes, 20 different lines and use the funniest thing, which sometimes works and sometimes didn't. This one is just charming to me. I love the runner about, with all due respect.
Yes,
because that's actually something that that's a cliche that I get really grumpy about.
Right.
Is that people say that.
With all due respect, you're an asshole.
For people they don't respect. And then I'm like, I guess that technically makes sense. So I was really happy to see that called out here.
So there were some things about Ricky Bobby's character that I was a little bit confused about. Like, is he supposed to be a little less intelligent or not? Because there are moments and there are things that he does that There are some of his actions that just like seem like, okay, this guy has a really like kind of a low IQ, but then mm-hmm. he will say things like, you know, use the with all due respect, or like there was something else that he was talking to someone. I forget what it was, but he's using like SAT words.
Yeah.
Correctly. And so I was just kind of like a little bit confused by where Ricky was supposed to be.
No, that's a problem. That's the Bart Simpson problem, is that we're told that Bart Simpson is dumb, but you know, he's aware of the works of Pablo Neruda. That's an issue. And that's what makes it a little bit more of a long sketch than a movie with, you know, heart. This isn't a comedy with heart. I wouldn't go that far.
No.
But I don't know. I've always liked the character. I've always kind of liked the characters. Watching it through this time, I was like, oh, you didn't do anything with Amy Adams, did you?
So that's right. Thank you for saying that. Because like, what I want to talk about now is my true feminist killjoy experience with this movie is that all of the women characters are paper thin. They are parchment paper thin.
I can't argue that.
And kind of gross. Mm-hmm. Like, kind of, it's not, there's like, you know, the most positively portrayed, or like the least anti-feminist, in my opinion, character is the mom, played by Jane Lynch, because she is sort of allowed to not just be a total stereotype, but she's, her main function is like, I'm motherly. And then it's like a joke that she's motherly, but oh my God, but she also has sexual appetite. That's so funny. And then there's the, you know, the Leslie Bibbs harpy character, who's a harpy, or like a gold digger.
Right.
And then Amy Adams, who is an assistant, who is partially attractive because she
took her glasses off.
Right.
She whipped her hair.
Right, exactly. And she's like, he's like, you've always been there for me. And I'm like, you paid her to. Mm-hmm. As somebody, as an administrative professional, I find that trope very gross. And then again, this like, oh, I didn't see how beautiful you were.
Right.
I do. She killed it though in her weird speech before they fuck on the table.
Right.
Yeah.
That was like, I'm like, oh man, this is why.
That's why they hired her, I guess.
This is why you have so many Oscar nominations. Right. And then Molly Shannon's character also made me laugh, but just like, you know, total peripheral lush character. Right. And that's it. Like, that's literally it.
No, that's true.
I do. I kind of took Jane Lynch's character a little bit different because she was the one I was like, hells yeah. When she finally whips his boys into shape, like Walker in Texas, like, yes.
Yeah.
Sometimes you got to just like bear down on a kid. But also like Leslie Bibb, she's like completely, her character is completely gross. But I, for whatever reason, I am like fascinated by that stereotype, that white, rich, southern, slightly trashy.
I'm a driver's like, wife. I don't work.
Right. Yeah. So I'm like, and it's kind of like, this is the other side of Sandra Bullock's character in Blindside.
Okay.
That's kind of what I see it as.
Okay.
But yeah, like Leslie Bibb, I don't think she gets enough credit in a lot of these comedies. She's actually pretty...
She's great.
She's pretty great.
Like, she did a good job with a horrible role.
Right, right.
But it's a horrible role. And it makes me feel gross watching a whole movie like this where all the female characters are so inconsequential. At the end of the movie, I'm like, well, that makes me feel bad.
Right. She's just kind of like bouncing around. Right.
I am not going to be able to provide a counterargument to that particular feeling bad. No, that's you know. And the difference is... Were this made today, I don't know that that would be approached the same way. You know, most dumb comedies of 2016 and later don't make that mistake.
They're getting better at it.
Or at least they're getting better at it. But in 2006, no, we can just have these round men yell at each other for the entire film.
Yeah, it's just a lot of, I think one of the things I did not enjoy is that I hate it when a bit goes on too long. And again, that dinner table scene for me is just like, oh my God, really? And then the kids, like literally, like I was like really getting pissed off about how those kids were talking to the adults. So.
And that's why it was so satisfying for you when they
finally. Yes. Yeah. And you know, they had a little more respect by the end of the movie. Cole, what's his name?
Gary Cole.
I usually enjoy him.
He was kind of not right up there in this movie. Another issue is he plays Ricky Bobby's dad, and I think I'm also, like, my least favorite plot line is daddy issues.
Oh, yeah.
I'm trying to be more accommodating. Like, I've sort of had this realization that, like, all of the guys who say, like, I'm not interested in movies like If Beale Street Could Talk, because I don't have those feelings in my life. I'm like, maybe I should be open-hearted and be interested in movies about daddy issues, even though I don't have those feelings in my life. So I'm trying to work on that, but I do roll my eyes. But going back, I do think that Gary Cole was not totally up to par.
Right.
Which, it's a high par. He's so funny.
Yeah.
Or low par? That doesn't make sense. Why are we as a society using a golf metaphor on a day-to-day basis? No one understands golf.
And yet there's so many from baseball. Like, then, you could make a baseball. You know, oh, he's out in left field. You know,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
You know, they're throwing softballs.
Do either one of you follow NASCAR or watch it? Or?
I have literally never watched a NASCAR race.
I might have watched for 15 minutes once, and that was the absolute longest. I've gone to a demolition derby. That's fun.
Interesting.
Because it
takes out the boring part where they're not crashing. I hate NASCAR. And that's why I feel like my love for this movie is pure, because I actively hate NASCAR. Gotcha. Like, it's one of those things that I think this probably shouldn't exist. We should probably put a stop to this.
Right.
So, but here it's almost endearing because I think they're ribbing it just enough.
Yeah.
The trope that I don't like, daddy issues, like, I could take or leave, like, they kind of wash over me. The trope that I've become sick of in the intervening 10 years is the bromance trope. And so I like that it's in here, but only as much as it needs to be. That, like, there is part of this plot is about Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly, you know, becoming better friends to one another.
Right.
Because they clearly love each other. Which I love the scene where John C. Reilly calls for help with the stereo. And Will Ferrell keeps forgetting that he hates him, like, because that they care about each other so much that they keep falling back into those modes. But that comes up like four or five times.
Right.
Whereas in every Seth Rogen movie, that is literally what every single scene is about.
Mm. Right.
So I think that was handled well. I just like this movie more than everyone.
That's okay.
That's fine. You are right to have your feelings.
I love the joke. Why is the jazz music on the jukebox? It's there for profiling purposes. We also have the Pet Shop Boys and Seal.
I laughed so hard. Yeah. I think that made me laugh more than anything else in the whole movie.
Yeah.
If I had dogs, they would have been scared.
That was a really good moment.
Yeah, so that's Talladega Night. Oh, don't, if you haven't seen it and this conversation made you want to, that's interesting.
Well, let us know why.
But
tweet us.
I wouldn't go to that extended version, because it does, I will say, it does slow down in the back half. Like, after he has his meltdown on the track, we really could have skipped a lot of what followed. Mm-hmm. And in the extended version runs like 2 hours and 5 minutes, and all of the extra stuff is in the back half. So,
wow.
I would go for theatrical cut.
Yeah, that's another bit that lasted way too long. Him running around naked, her in his tidy whiteies on the track, trying to get out the imaginary fire.
I love this is I just have such weird affection for this, because I genuinely like the shot where his dad walks away from him outside the Applebee's, and he's standing in the middle of the road watching him go. For some reason, I'm like, yeah, this has affected me just a little bit.
Okay.
Did your dad leave you at Applebee's?
No, I think it's probably tied into my feelings about Applebee's, which I consider Applebee's a very bittersweet place. Like, have you ever gone into it? Have you gone into an Applebee's recently?
No, I have not been to an Applebee's since roughly 2006.
Yeah.
If you go into an Applebee's right now, they have, like, perfected this weird chemical physics science of making you feel like, I'm happy and relaxed and in my hometown. Just like the way it's laid out and the stuff on the wall and the music that's playing, you'll walk in and be like, huh. And then the next 90 minutes is you realizing that's fake and this food is shit. And so somehow that ties into, I don't know.
I do remember that the last time I went to an Applebee's, I went to the one that's out in Edgewood. Is that still there?
I think so.
Yeah. And I was like, why do I never go to Applebee's? Mm-hmm. Because it was like a totally satisfying, cheap meal,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, inexpensive meal. And
cheap meal.
You're right.
And I very much was like, I definitely never go here because of snobbishness, more so than anything else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was my
takeaway from Applebee's.
Wow.
Note that I did not go back for nearly 15 years.
Right. I don't recall ever putting words to it, or it's just always, it's like, eh. No, I'm okay.
I mean, this is a whole other conversation. That's not what this podcast is about. But I think it was the Washington Post, maybe it was the LA Times, did a thing where they had their most serious food critic evaluate the 10 biggest chains, the 10 chains,
awesome.
The chains with the largest number of locations, uh-huh. and give them a letter grade A to F. Last place was Buffalo Wild Wings. Aww. But the only one...
I kind of like Buffalo Wild Wings.
Yeah, so do I.
The only one that got an A was Cracker Barrel.
Really?
And I know that Cracker Barrel is highly problematic.
Right.
But after seeing that, I was like, really? And I went to Cracker Barrel, and it was fucking good.
Oh, their food's delicious.
Yeah.
I haven't gone in years because of it being problematic.
Right, exactly. Right. It's been so long since I've been to Cracker Barrels, and mostly because of why they're problematic, but also because I think... I was mostly going the night after, it was hangover meal.
Yeah.
It was that's what I was doing in my 20s is that's the only reason I ever went to Cracker Barrel.
If you can make whatever moral bargain with yourself you have to make to eat at a Cracker Barrel. And the other thing is probably the hangover meal. You're going to get a full table of food just for you for $11.
Right.
It's why did my eggs come with pie? What happened?
Is that a whole chicken with these eggs? What? It's I didn't order this. Oh, no, ma'am. It's a side of fried chicken.
It's Cracker Barrel.
And you could get furniture and gifts for your grandma in the lobby while you're waiting for your table.
You could write a book on tape.
Right.
And return it to any Cracker Barrel.
Is that true?
I
it's for truckers?
That was true in 2006 because I did do it in 2006.
What was the book?
The Da Vinci Code.
Yes, all of that scans.
Actually,
Da Vinci Code at Cracker Barrel in 2006 is a very logical sentence.
Exactly. That is the most most early 2000s sentence that you probably could have stated without using a boy band.
It's time for X-Rated, the segment where we come up with the rating and see if my high opinion of Talladega Nights will be able to propel it to our number one spot so far. Give it a number 1 to 100, Camila Adams.
This is really tough for me. Mm-hmm. I think my lowest rated movie was Sharky's. No, Elysium is clearly that. But I was kind of bouncing it back and forth from whatever I rated Sharky's Revenge or Machine.
Sharky's Honor.
If anybody makes a drinking game for our podcast, us saying Sharky's Revenge is definitely a two drink.
Drowning Sharky. Yeah.
Sharky's Opus. So, 62, I think is where I'm going to go.
62?
Yeah, so because of the few laugh out loud moments, it's I think that's two more than what I gave Sharky.
I'm 61.
Huh. Yes. Oh, look at that. This could be our highest rated episode. Because my rating is a 79.
Okay.
That is easily my highest so far out of this selection. So it is a 67.3 is the score for Talladega Nights. Is that Kiss the Girls was number one before this. Kiss the Girls is, 71.75. Kiss the Girls hangs on to its
All right.
title.
I wish I had gone lower.
Right, exactly. I would like to change my answer.
But I cannot have Talladega Nights. This is really this movie was fine.
Yeah.
It was fine movie to me.
Yeah, it was just I never need to watch it again.
I think I sounded like I disliked it more than I actually did in this podcast, but
I did not hate it.
No, certainly not.
And it's not there was any one thing that I could just be like, oh my God, this movie sucks so bad. I enjoy Will Ferrell. I enjoy John C. Reilly and, the other cast of characters. And there were laugh out loud moments. And so, but they were few and far between for me.
Right.
What's the, because it was one of the lines that was different on my DVD. What's the Jean Girard's line? My husband and I want what every couple wants, to retire to Sri Lanka and design a currency for dogs and cats to use.
Yes, that was
Sweden.
Yes, okay. Yes, I was stuck on that currency for dogs and cats for a while, just thinking.
Would they know?
Right, exactly.
How would they?
Well, we haven't taught them how to count yet, Jean, but.
There's a step
it's so
in between.
Great. Will Ferrell just saying, that's dumb. And him saying, no, it's not dumb. Why would you say that's dumb? He's so sincere. What a great character.
I love the closing line. It should have been the last line of the movie should have been, Sir, You Taste of America. That would have capped it off. But instead there was some kind of after. No, then they went out to the parking lot and talked to his dad. And
yeah, he was like trying to get thrown out of Applebee's. That was the goal for the night.
Yeah, should have been New Taste of America.
Hey, you can't handle the truth. That's a podcast I used to have. It's also the segment where we say what we've seen recently. Robin, would you want to start?
Captain Marvel.
I saw that today.
I saw it twice.
I have also seen it twice.
I saw it once. And then anyone who knows my husband and has seen Captain Marvel will understand why I said I need to watch Colin watch this. Mm-hmm. It's because of Goose. He loves cats.
Oh, gotcha.
So, so I went to see it again yesterday, and I went with a bunch of my buddies, and I liked it twice.
I really liked it. Yeah. I don't know if it was because I was kind of like low expectations going in. Why? But I think I was like kind of curious as to why Brie was chosen as the, but she was great. Like she was like, she performed, she had this character down with like, you know, there was equal amounts of cockiness, of humor, of sincerity, of vulnerability and strength. And it was like, none of it was like over the top. It was like, oh my God,
she killed it.
Yeah, this is perfect.
No, she did a great job. And it was funny enough. And it was, you know, one thing I saw some people say critically was like, oh, it feels like a 90s superhero movie. I kind of liked that because it was 90s. A superhero movie set in the 90s.
Right.
So it worked. And I think that it is more about introducing a character and selling us on a character as then it's about the plot of the movie Captain Marvel.
Right.
So because it did such a good job of that, I loved it.
Yeah.
I love the buddy stuff with Nick Fury. That's probably my favorite element of the film.
I like how they almost, the soundtrack was almost solely female led bands until they got to Nirvana. And I was like, oh, we were so close, guys. We were there.
Right.
That could have easily been a Breeders song.
I was going to
go to the Breeders.
I think that the Breeders maybe said no.
Probably.
Yeah.
But yeah, I highly recommend it, and I would happily like go see it again.
Well, everybody's seen it, so that's good.
Yeah.
I'm very happy. Like, okay, there was the big like, oh, the nerds are going to tank. The trolls are going to tank the Rotten Tomatoes score, and they want the box office. And then it didn't affect the box office at all. Just like what happened with Black Panther.
Right.
So maybe we can just stop reporting on this when it happens
now. Yeah,
exactly.
Like maybe it could just not be news.
Exactly. Just let them have whatever little like imaginary feelings that they're going to have about like, oh yeah, we're going to take it down. Like, no, dude, no. It's not going
to
happen.
Or, and this is me being an elitist because I get to be a movie critic.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we should stop caring what the entire population of the world feels about a movie.
Exactly, because we've got professionals like you, Sean Collier.
I mean,
makers,
influencers.
It's so much of the internet is based around how do you feel about this thing?
Right.
And 9 times out of 10, that's some dumb way because you don't know. Like every social media grew up around. What are you doing right now? What are you eating? What are you watching? And that gave people the impression that every way they feel about everything matters.
Right.
And it doesn't.
Right.
I think that fed into the anti-intellectualism thing, and that fed into a bunch of terrible things.
Mm-hmm.
And so when it's like, oh, Rotten Tomatoes, they're messing with the audience score because people are messing with it. Well, then get rid of the audience score.
But,
the point of this website is like, what are critics saying?
But. Yeah. Which they did, right? Or no, you can't.
You can't vote on it beforehand.
Okay. Yeah. But I do want to say that social media has created a platform for actual critics who do know what they're talking about, who aren't white men, who have been able to, you know, build their voice and then become actual tastemakers and influencers in a way that they wouldn't have without social media. So there's a good side to
it. No, you're absolutely right.
And always two sides of the coin.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, is this beyond the scope of the number one movie in America podcast.
True.
But I just think that platforms need to be like way faster with the and you're done.
Yeah.
You know, that's like the notion of free speech is actually not a good one to go by for an online platform. It has to be like, you know, you kind of have to be contributing to what we're doing here.
Yeah.
And that's the way that you amplify the voices that you're talking about, Robin, while shutting up the voices that I'm bitching about.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, we just solved the world.
Cool.
You're welcome.
I saw so much crap this week. 5 feet apart, I hated it so much.
I think I just read like your little blurb about your review and I saw how much you hated it.
It's Fault in Our Stars was okay. Me and Earl and the Dying Girl was really good. But this shouldn't be a genre.
Right, I'm sick of them.
17-year-olds dying. What is wrong with you that you need that to get your tears out?
Right, exactly.
I mean, that's always been a genre, though. Like, I read books in that genre when I was 17.
I guess I always just kind of bypassed them. Like, because a lot of these, like, the ones that are coming out now, I'm surprised. It's like, oh, it was a book?
Right.
In the 90s? Like, right. When I was a kid? Like, I have no idea. And, like, but yeah, there was one with the little girl from Amandla Steinberg.
Oh, yeah.
I forget what the name of that one was, but I saw it one day. It was like on HBO, and I was like, why not? And
Everything.
Yes, I really fucking liked that one.
I think that has a woman director.
Does it?
I think that's why it's in my radar.
Okay. Yeah, but that one was really good.
You know, the two I mentioned, which are the two I think of, had kind of something to say about life or death or both or whatever. This was just pure, what if we came up with the saddest circumstances and put two characters there? Like, it's not even... They have cystic fibrosis and they're dying and they're in love, but because they both have cystic fibrosis, they can't touch each other. That would be enough.
Right.
But then her sister died in a cliff diving accident.
Oh my
and
God.
The nurse saw kids die before, like every
and
scene.
And then somebody murders her puppy in
right,
front of her
exactly.
or something.
It's just unabashed. And I'm surprised, like, that went up. That's at like 52% on Rotten Tomatoes. And I'm like, where are you people who went thumbs up on this? I saw that Keira Knightley movie. I think the embargo is still up, so I can't say anything yet.
What Keira Knightley movie?
The Aftermath.
Oh. Will it still be up on April 1st?
Maybe not.
Okay.
It's not worth it. Other than to say, this is a movie about a German architect in the immediate aftermath of World War II.
Oh, that one. Clearly they thought it was going
to
have Oscar buzz, and it didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's being released in April. Yes.
So,
that one.
It's about a British lady and a German man who wasn't technically a Nazi falling in love.
Is this Alexander Skarsgård?
Yeah. You decide if you think that's going to turn out well or not. What did I just say? Oh, Climax. The Gaspar Noé's psychedelic dancing movie. This is the first one of his movies I've seen. His whole jam is kind of like terrible things, stare at it. And in this movie, there's a group of very talented but kind of trashy young dancers, like at a boarding school in Germany. And if for the start of the movie, we just kind of, there's an amazing long shot of their entire performance. There's like a 12-minute shot of one performance that is gorgeous and perfect. And then we spend like 30 minutes hopping around, because after the rehearsal, they start to have a little party. And we just kind of hop around listening to them talk. And then at about an hour in, they figure out that the sangria was laced with LSD. And they all start either fucking or killing each other, or like just horrible things happen. And it turns into this complete nightmare.
Oh my God.
And I think
I want to see this movie.
I don't know if it's like, it's a piece of art. It's not like, hey, this is a movie I can review and I can tell you whether or not you should go see. But it's really well directed and really upsetting and freaky and weird and interesting.
What is it about your psyche, Sean Collier, that makes you love movies about German dance schools?
Yeah, I know. Like, I walked in thinking, Suspiria 2. Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. This is the movie that the most loudly announces what it wants you to think it's like, because the first thing that happens is the end credits, because it's an art movie.
I'll shut the front door.
The full end credits, the songs and everything roll as soon as the movie starts.
What?
But then the second thing is they go to interviews with the people you're about to meet, like they're being taped during their audition, and it just cuts back and forth. But it's on an old 90s box TV, as I think it's set in the 90s. And then there's a stack of VHS tapes next to it that are just like a list of what we want you to be thinking about.
Oh.
It's like Suspiria and Salo and Zombie, and it's like every and Uncian Andalou, and every movie that you're like, I heard something fucked up happens in that movie, is just sitting there.
I'm like, rolling my eyes.
I think I liked it, but I don't think that's the point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will see this once it comes on Netflix.
It's at an odd number of theaters right now because nothing is coming out. That's why I reviewed damn 5 feet apart on the radio.
I have been so busy. I haven't been able to go to the movies in a while. And so on Friday when I woke up, I'm like, I'm going to the movies today. And I opened up my AMC app and then I was like, I am not going to the movies today.
I got to say, I'm super excited about Us as well as Pet Cemetery. coming out.
I don't know if I'm going to. I definitely don't think I can watch Pet Sematary.
Right.
Us, because of how much I loved Get Out, like, maybe I'll try. I'm going to rely on Sean telling me if I can handle it.
Yeah.
Can you handle the truth?
I can't.
What is, oh, and Triple Frontier on Netflix. That was the other thing I reviewed. It's good.
How was it? It was good?
It's good. It's a very good Netflix movie because it's good. It's nothing that you're going to go nuts over. Gotcha. So, like, you're not going to, like, feel bad if you wander to the kitchen for a second. But it's an action movie.
Solid.
Yeah, yeah. Completely solid. We've been talking for too long. Anybody? Anything else?
Nope.
Movies?
Nope.
Thoughts? Takes? Hot or otherwise? So let's draw a movie for next time.
All right.
The number is 430. Of course, this does include Captain Marvel, which is the current number one movie. It could land on that. I don't think that's what's going to happen, but that would be interesting.
It
if
would
we
be.
Had to do a field trip?
Yeah.
Well...
I don't like the look on your face.
It's not Captain Marvel, but it's oddly close.
It's a Marvel movie?
That it is.
Does it start with Captain?
And a recent one.
America?
Captain America?
I don't.
Cappy Merca?
I don't know if 2 years later I have any hot takes on Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Yay!
Oh, I would love to watch this and talk about how much I hate it.
You hated Guardians 2?
I was literally talking about this yesterday. That's the only MCU movie that I'm like, this movie sucks.
Wow.
And so when then people were like, why do you feel that way? I was like, I frankly do not remember much of it. So this is a golden opportunity for
me
to explain why. And maybe I won't hate it as much this time.
Maybe you're just in a weird place.
But you're going to have to watch all of it again.
I own it.
Okay.
Sweet. Yeah. I do too. It says that we get points.
Well, we get points.
Yeah.
Right.
We don't have points in this show.
We do. The first episode that you have points. You get points if you own
If you
the movie.
Own the movie.
I don't think we've had anything I own. I bought Talladega Nights and I'm keeping it because it was only $4 on Blu-ray.
I have a question
about
like, okay, so when we inevitably get to like the Lord of the Rings and all that shit, like when we land on like Lord of the Rings, like 4.
Yeah.
I have never seen any of the Lord of the Rings movies. Is that
watch
something?
It without context.
Okay. Okay.
That's my book.
Okay.
What?
It makes much more, it makes much for a much more interesting discussion if I have no idea why these people are on there.
It's like our friend Abby Feuder has pitched a podcast, which is she watches the season finale of a TV show she's never watched.
Interesting.
And then like guesses what the rest of the show was about.
Okay.
And we were talking about this last night. Like she ideally would have a guest who loved the show, but they only get to interject 3 times.
Oh.
Like she could ask them questions. But they can't interrupt her.
I like that.
They get like 3 interruption cards. Anyway, so
I would listen to that show.
I'm trying to recreate this experience. She's a very busy woman. She probably won't ever actually record this.
Damn it, Abby. Why not?
People have spoken.
Right.
I think if we landed on Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, and you had to jump into that one, it would. There are people who go to the 4th, 5th, 6th chapter of a thing because
their friends are going.
I don't understand those people.
And look, now maybe you will
like,
when this happens.
Like Dan will jump into a TV show. Like in the middle, like I'm like, no, we need to start at the very beginning. I can't just come in like all half cocked and not knowing what's happening. It's like, no, that's not how this works.
We will be back next time with Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, our first Marvel movie, our first superhero movie. Before we go, once again, Talladega Nights hit number one on August 4th, 2006. What was the number one song in America?
So I know this is wrong because we placed it as the weekend that I drove to Seattle or close to that. But the only song I know for sure went to number one in 2006 is Do I Make You Proud by Taylor Hicks, who won American Idol that year.
Dude.
The prematurely gray dude. Like
yeah, whatever happened.
You are about a month off.
Yeah.
That did go to number one, but in early July. The last thing I heard about him, he was playing Teen Angel in a touring production of Grease.
Good for him.
One song. You're the American Idol. You get to go to Pittsburgh and do one song a night.
Good for him.
Sexy Back?
You're all around it. That was for 8 weeks. But after this period, this is somebody featuring somebody. It is a lady featuring a man.
Lady featuring a man.
Shakira? Hips Don't Lie.
No, no. Also, we've named almost every song around this.
Huh. A lady featuring a man.
Bit of a dance floor hit.
Would it be Brittany?
No.
Again, this is my pop culture dark phase.
The lady in question kind of started folky, but then like pivoted to more of an R&B hip hop. Correct.
So Promiscuous.
That's it. Okay. Nelly Furtado featuring Timbaland, Promiscuous. Nice. For 7 weeks.
Am I throwing you
summer.
Off? Nope.
That's a good song. That is a great song.
That's the. I remember that clearly because that was the only time in my life I was actually going to clubs. Because that fall is when I was in Ireland. And in Ireland, despite how much they drink, which is more than you could possibly imagine, like normal pubs close at like 10:30, 11.
Oh.
And clubs stay open till 2.
Really?
So it's like, and we were college kids. So we were like, well, I guess we're going to the club then.
Or you're tearing up the fucking dance floor.
A little bit. And so whenever I hear Promiscuous or Sexy Back or London Bridge, I'm like, yeah, I remember this time.
I love it.
We can end on that.